Yes. Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Jack Peacock, and I represent Mr. and Mrs. Bracken in this matter.
Are they still in the house?
Yes, Your Honor.
How long have they been in the house and not made payments on their mortgage?
Probably since 2012. The lender won't take payments. They try. The lender sends them back.
What price house is this? How much do they owe?
How much do they owe? I think around $150.
That's a modest house.
Yes, Your Honor. I have submitted briefs, and I understand
What is the relief you want? What are you?
Well, I believe that the case should be.
I know you want it to go back, but ultimately, what is the relief you want from the district court if we remanded it?
Well, number one, I believe that we're entitled to damages under the Texas Debt Collection Act, plus attorney's fees, and that's the relief that we're asking.
So that's basically it. Thank you. That narrows it down for us.
It's a damage case, and I wanted to point out a number of things to begin with. After this case was fully briefed and submitted to the court, the Thompson case came out. I believe Judge Graves, you were in that panel, wrote the concurring opinion. But anyway, that case came out, and basically, after that case came out about 90 days ago, it became clear to me that some of our theories of recovery that we have appealed to this court probably are not going to get past the Thompson case. In particular, our theory of waiver, I believe that we had a good argument for waiver in the Thompson case, but that's Thompson versus Bank of America. But the court held otherwise, and this case probably is on par with.
Telling me I was wrong on that panel, and you expect me to rule wrongly again? Is that
No, Your Honor.
You gonna put it nicer than that?
I'm just gonna say that I'm withdrawing the waiver claim because of that the Thompson opinion, and also I'm withdrawing our claim under Section 392.304A19 under the Texas Debt Collection Act. And if you go to page 21 of our brief, it lists the various theories of recovery under the Debt Collection Act. And what I want to focus on is the very first one there, which is 392.304A8. Which prohibits a debt collector from misrepresenting the character, extent, or amount of a consumer debt. And also I might add that the negligent misrepresentation claim, I'm going to withdraw that one as well for the simple reason that even though I think our argument has merit, based on the status of the law that now exists under the negligent misrepresentation, I don't think I can prove damages. So why, even if I win that, I don't win it because it goes back to the court and the district court, and I have no damages under that theory. So that leaves us with Section 392.304A8. And our basis, which I believe that we're on solid ground here.
What that section is?
It's in the Texas Finance Code, Your Honor.
What does it say? You said that's the claim you're making. What is the claim?
It prohibits a debt collector from misrepresenting the character, extent, or amount of a consumer debt. It's undisputed that this is a consumer debt. It's undisputed that the lender is a debt collector. So then the question is, did the debt collector misrepresent the character, extent, or amount? I don't believe that there's any evidence that the debt collector misrepresented the amount. I don't think that there's any evidence that the debt collector misrepresented the extent. But I believe the evidence is solid that the debt collector misrepresented the character of the debt. Now, you may say, well, how is that possible? Well, as you recall the facts of this case, our clients have owned this property for almost 21 years as we sit here today. And they faithfully made payments for the first 14 years. And in the Great Recession of 08, they lost their jobs like a lot of other people. So they got behind on their payments. They tried to do loan modifications with the lender. The lender kept sending them back or telling them they needed to send more. You know the routine. I'm sure you've heard these cases before, these mortgage cases, and that's the routine. They make them do it, redo it again, and constantly have the threat of foreclosure hanging over them. They send out foreclosure notices and say, well, okay, we'll postpone that foreclosure. And we'll put these poor folks through total grief, and for no reason, because the evidence shows after 2 years, almost 2 years of this, the lender then tells them, oh, yours is a home equity loan, and we can't modify home equity loans.
Well, let me ask you this without going through it. I mean, cutting to the chase, I mean, what are you saying that the district court missed about this? I mean, it's squirrely. You've got a lot of claims, some that have been abandoned. I mean, it's like having pled just a panoply of every conceivable cause of action that, you know, from A to zebra, aardvarks to zebra, in terms of, you know, this whole deal. And then this is sort of, you know, shrunk down in here at the podium. You know, you're still shrinking this case down to what you view, you know, to be cognizable. So, as you say, we get a whole bunch of these, you know, and I'm wondering, like, why in the world is this a federal case? You know, it's a home equity loan and all that, and, you know, here we are. I mean, what's the overriding federal principle here? So, cutting to the chase, Judge Jolly asked you the salient one, what relief you want, but what is the gravamen of what you're saying the district court erred about this case? Are we here on a matter of law, construing Texas law as a diversity court, or are you saying there's some grievous factual error or mischaracterization that the district court missed that we're supposed to hone in on? Do you understand my question?
Yes, I do, Your Honor. We raised the facts. In other words, our contention was from the start that the lender had told our clients after 2 years of all this grief that they couldn't modify a home equity loan, which was not true, but our clients didn't know that. And they told them that there were liens against the property, which is not true. Now, so what I wanted the district court to do was, and at the time that the court granted summary judgment, the Thompson case hadn't come out. So I believe that the theories of recovery that we brought to this court should have stood up in the district court. And then after Thompson came out, I think that we would have been reduced to one theory of recovery. I think the court should have denied summary judgment on this theory of recovery. That's clear to me. And I believe that we certainly raised a fact issue as to whether the lender misrepresented the character of the debt. I mean, In 2000.
I mean, is this case about dollars and cents? How much is owed? Inability to pay? Is it about equity and, you know, unclean hands on both sides? I'm still trying to get to the core of, you know, what we're asked to sort out. I mean, is it about dollars and cents? You said $100,000, which is not a small amount of money, but it's not as big as some. We had a case yesterday, that's why you got the question. We had another one. This is day two of us dealing with Texas mortgages in this default situation where somebody had still been in the house since 2008, but the dollar amounts were like $900,000. The day we get a case on Tuesday where it's $100,000 a case. But I mean, trying to sort through the equities or lack thereof aside and cut to the kernel of, I mean, what is the controlling legal principle that's driving the case? If you're saying this, there's an error of law that we're focused, I'm still missing that.
Well,
what you're saying is, I understood what you said. The only thing left now for us to consider, you have withdrawn all claims relating to those involving the issues that Judge Stewart raised.
Yes.
And now are focusing on the Texas Debt Collection Act.
Yes.
And the section of it that holds the lender here liable for mischaracterizing the debt.
Yes.
And they mischaracterized the debt by saying that it had a lien on it and that it was not subject to modification.
Correct, Your Honor.
All right, and so my question to you then is, what damages are flowing from this one claim that is left in the case?
Well, certainly mental anguish for 2 years of going through a process with this lender thinking that the loan could be modified. Certainly that's a big factor. Cost and expense of submitting, resubmitting, jumping through all these hoops that the lender put them through for almost 2 years. Attorney's fees, which now, as you might know, are probably fairly substantial. I don't know the exact amount, but
fairly. Under the statute, what have you got to prove to establish a mischaracterization of the debt? And specifically, what have you got to prove to show damages flowing from that mischaracterization?
Yes. Number one, to answer the first question, we have to prove, number one, that the lender did in fact say that a home equity loan could not be modified. Number two, we have to show that the lender did tell our client that the property, that the security for the loan was or had liens against it. All right, that's a violation of the statute. Then number two, or rather I should say number three, the damages that flow from that are, under the statute, actual damages, which includes mental anguish, attorney's fees, cost and expenses, all of those types.
Are there any statutory damages that flow from that?
Under the Texas Debt Collection Act, actually there are.
You would be entitled to if you proved your case.
Yes.
But does that just amount to a little of nothing, or is that a factor as well?
It's fairly nominal, I think, like the Federal Debt Collection Act on that. I just don't remember right now.
Right. Do you have any authority that supports your cause of action you're asserting now?
Violation of...
Other than the statute itself.
Well, there's lots of authority on what constitutes a violation when it comes to the amount of a consumer debt, misrepresenting the character of the debt, the character of the debt is not defined in the statute. It's not defined in the federal statute either.
So you would have to convince a court that the 2008 two factors that you've mentioned constitute mischaracterization under the statute?
Yes.
Did you have a chance to do that below?
We didn't, Your Honor. We had, the case was decided by MSJ, so other than the briefing.
Did you raise it below?
Yes, we raised the statute below.
I mean, the very thing that you're arguing now, you raised and presented to the district court in the motion for summary judgment or in response to it or in your complaint? Did you allege it in your complaint?
Well, we alleged in our complaint that particular statute.
But you did not allege the two mischaracterizations of the debt?
I didn't break out misrepresenting the character of the debt in the court below. I mean, I
did you say that it had been mischaracterized? Did you use those words?
Yes. Oh, did I use that word? I don't remember. Pardon me, Your Honor?
You just cited the section.
Yes, cited the section, offered the proof, and it's in our pleadings. It's in our response to the motion for summary judgment. Oh, I'm sorry. Out of time.
All right. You're done. You've had a red light.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Is that helpful? All right. Thank you, sir. Hear from Mr. Luce.
May it please the court. My name is Tom Luce. I represent Wells Fargo in this case. I'm not going to talk much about his breach of contract and waiver claim or negligent misrep anymore. I do plan to address the TDCA claim that's left. I want to start by noting a little bit of a disconnect between the TDCA claim that the Brackens pleaded, the TDCA claim that the district court addressed, and the arguments that the Brackens have made on appeal. They're not all the same claims and arguments, and we've spelled that out in our briefs why we think that's different. The Brackens alleged about a dozen pages of sort of a jumble of facts about the whole history of their negotiated or interactions.
Why don't you just address what he has said? That the only thing that's left standing in this case, that's the only thing we'd really be interested in.
What's left is his Section 304A8 claim. And as he stated, Section A8 requires, first of all, a fraudulent, deceptive, or misleading representation in debt collection. And so, first of all, the representation that he says is actionable has to concern debt collection, and it has to be a misrepresentation of the character, extent, or amount of a consumer debt. He says it's just the character of the debt now, as I understand his argument. And I want to turn then to the specific arguments he makes, the specific representations that he argues in his brief, and explain why those are not actionable under that section of the TDCA. The first thing he argues about is the July 9th, 2010 letter the bank sent him that stated or misstated that there were other liens on the property. First, that particular letter was a letter that was concerning a loan modification request that the Brackens had made to the bank. And so the context of that statement was, we're not giving you a loan modification. And this court has held in a number of cases, and as Mr. Peacock correctly stated, the most recent is Thompson versus Bank of America. That's at 783 F3rd 1022. That case is not in our briefs. It was decided afterwards. But it's also in Singa, Watson, and Thomas, three other cases from this court, all of which hold that representations made in the context of loan modifications are not actionable under Section A8 of the TDCA. They are not representations about the character, extent, or amount of a debt. And I'll quote the specific statement from the Thompson case. The court wrote, statements about loan modification applications and the postponement of foreclosure do not concern the, quote, character, extent, or amount of a home loan. And so the first alleged misrepresentation that the Brackens rely on, the statement that there are other liens on the property, is not actionable under Section A8. The specific statement does not concern the Brackens' debt at all. It's a statement that there are other liens on their property. And this was decided, this claim was decided on summary judgment, the TDCA claim. The summary judgment record shows that at a certain point in time, and I'm not sure that it clarifies the time frame, but at a certain point in time, the banks were very concerned about whether, and if so, how you could modify a home equity loan. And as this court knows from its Pennington decision, and also from the case that it certified to the Texas Supreme Court, which was Sims versus Carrington Mortgage, I believe is the name of that, there was a great deal of uncertainty about whether home equity loans could be modified during this time frame. So during that time, there was some question about whether that could be done, and the bank put what it calls a hard flag on home equity loans to prevent them from being modified by accident. And so the statement that there were other liens was an internal mechanism used by the bank to prevent them from modifying home equity loans during a time when the law was very much unsettled about whether that could be done.
But you did it knowing there was no lien on the property.
They put a hard flag, and there was not a lien on the property. The bank doesn't dispute that.
To that extent, it was a misrepresentation.
It was a misstatement, and it was unfortunate that that was sent to the Brackens, but the use of that mechanism internally.
A misstatement and a misrepresentation.
I'm not trying to draw a distinction between those two. The use of that mechanism internally to keep the bank from accidentally modifying a home equity loan is not an improper means of doing business.
Well, what it did, it sent them on a wild goose chase to try to chase down whether there was a lien on the property, made them engage in several phone calls, it had the effect of harassing them.
I don't know that I agree with that completely. What the Brackens pleaded and what is in Laura Bracken's affidavit is when she received the letter, and this comes from her deposition and from Mr. Bracken's deposition as well, when they received that letter, neither of them believed that there were liens on the property. And what she said is, I called the county clerk to confirm that there were no liens on the property. She didn't call because she thought there was or anything else. She called to confirm what she knew was correct, which was that there weren't any liens on the property.
But counsel, what's problematic about all of that is if you're trying to get a loan modification and you're being told by the lender that the reason that can't go through is because there's a lien on the property. As a homeowner, I may have every reason to believe, and I guess in fact to know, that there aren't any, but to the extent the lender thinks there are, and that's impeding the progress of a loan modification, then I'm concerned about it. You agree with that, won't you?
I don't disagree with that.
All right.
But I think the timing of this is also important, Your Honor. The Brackens first applied for a loan modification in about March of 2009. In May of 2010, the bank sent the Brackens a loan modification. They agreed to modify their loan, and they sent them the package that included the terms of the loan modification and said, sign this and return it. The Brackens thought that the amount of the loan modification was too high. They wanted a lower interest rate. They incorrectly believed that the bank had miscalculated their income when they calculated the amount of the principal and interest for the loan modification. But that was in May of 2005. So they actually gave the Brackens a loan modification, said, we'll do it, sign this, return it, and we're done. The Brackens didn't like what was offered, and they sent it back. The letter that contained the statement about other liens came out in July 9th of 2010, so a couple of months later. And so that wasn't really part of what was the work to get a loan modification accomplished in the first instance. The Brackens, I'm going to turn now, the Brackens also complain about other representations as part of their claims. They lumped all of this together in their argument about both Section 304A8 and 304A19. I don't know if Mr. Peacock thinks these are part of the 308A8 or not, but the other representations that they complained about concern promises of a loan modification. And again, in a long string of cases from this court, those kind of discussions are not actionable under Section A8. And so I don't think those other things that are in the Brackens brief constitute an actionable misrepresentation.
He's withdrawn that.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
He has withdrawn that, those representations. I mean, the only representation he's made is the, I mean, the only misrepresentation he's made relates to the home equity and to the what you've just addressed.
Right. And so I've addressed the part that the statement that there are liens against the property or that
home equity.
And the statement that they would not modify a home equity loan occurred after sending them the loan modification in May of 2005. And beginning in October of 2010 throughout October 2012, the bank consistently told the Brackens, we won't modify your loan because it is a Texas home equity loan. And at that time, there was serious question whether and how that kind of a loan could be modified. That uncertainty about whether that could legally be done, and the specific issue I think that was addressed in Sims versus Carrington, was whether you could take past due amounts and roll them into the principal and recapitalize those kind of loans. Sims was decided in 2014, and the Texas Supreme Court answered, yes, you can modify a home equity loan. Until that point, there was a great deal of litigation and a great deal of uncertainty about whether that could be done.
Well, what I understand you to be saying is that you have cured that misrepresentation by offering them the opportunity to modify their loan. Is that what you're saying?
No, Your Honor. That's not happened.
Well, let me try. I think what you're saying is it wasn't a misrepresentation as regards the loan modification because of the uncertainty at the time. And so when you were representing to them that a home equity loan may not be subject to a modification, that was based on the uncertainty about whether or not legally you could modify the home equity loan.
That's exactly correct, Your Honor.
All right. And then as regards the liens against the property, there was an internal mechanism where you would indicate a lien in order internally to flag that because of the concern about whether or not you could modify these home equity loans. And unfortunately, and you'll agree it was unfortunate, but unfortunately, it gets communicated to the Brackens that there is a lien against the property, but ultimately, they were able to get a loan modification despite that representation about the lien. Is that right? I mean, an offer was made to them to modify the loan.
That's correct, Your Honor. The offer to modify the loan was made in May of 2010. The letter that said there were other liens against the property was sent to the Brackens. It's a letter dated July 9th, 2010.
So it was after that.
And so that statement was after. And so although the record is not entirely clear, what is clear is I think the bank did not perceive a problem modifying those kind of loans, at least up until May when they offered the Brackens an opportunity to modify the loan. And that concern arose sometime between May of 2010 and July of 2010 when they sent a letter saying there were other liens. Sometime in that interim, I think I inferred that the process of putting a hard flag on home equity loans to prevent them from being modified was put into place. And so at some time after July, the bank had stopped modifying home equity loans because there was no because there was uncertainty whether those kind of loans could be modified. And of course, the downside, if the bank guessed wrong, is that they forfeit their principal, all of the principal. They lose their lien on a home equity loan, and those loans are all non-recourse loans. They lose whatever they lent on a home equity loan if they don't comply with the Texas Constitution. So that particular piece of it, I think also, it's clear, is not a representation about the character of the Brackens' debt, which I understand is what is at issue now. That's a statement about what is the state of Texas law and whether we can modify a home equity loan or not. That doesn't say anything about the character, amount, or extent of the Brackens' debt.
Categorically, where do you place the representation that there was a lien against the property? What is that?
That is a representation about the status of the Brackens' title, not about their debt.
Right. Doesn't have to do with the character of the debt, amount of the debt, extent of the debt.
No, and I think one of the decisions that I didn't cite but that I'd bring to the court's attention is Miller versus BAC Home Loans. That's at 726 F3rd 717, and in that case, the court rejected TDCA claims, I believe, under both Section A8 and A19, which is what the Brackens have argued here, and they say there is no actionable misrepresentation here because the debtors in that case, the Millers, they knew they had a mortgage debt, they were aware of the amount of that debt, and they were aware that they defaulted on that debt. And they said the other statements that the bank made in that case were not actionable under the TDCA because they didn't mislead or mischaracterize any of those things about the debt. And here, the Brackens have not said, and they don't argue, you told me the amount was wrong, you told me the extent of the debt was wrong, or you told me the character was wrong. The bank never said this was anything but a home equity loan, and that's what it was. So that's not actionable. I did want to address, and before I forget about it, one of the things that I believe, Judge Jolly, you asked is whether there were statutory damages in this case. I can't cite you to the section, but I know that a claim under Section 304A8 is not one of the sections that provides a remedy of statutory damages. There is another provision of the TDCA for which I think there is, I think it's $100 per violation of another section of that statute. I can't tell you what that is, but it's not A8. A8 does not give a statutory damages remedy. There were also questions of Mr. Peacock concerning the damages that he claims from this. And there is no evidence of any damages suffered by the Brackens in this case. Mr. Peacock mentioned mental anguish damages. There is no evidence of mental anguish damages. There is no evidence about the cost they incurred submitting materials to the bank in their efforts to get a loan modification. I think because this was disposed of on a summary judgment motion, there, I don't know that we got to the stage of putting in evidence of attorney's fees, but that evidence is not in the record either. And so in addition to not being an actionable claim under the TDCA, there isn't any evidence of any damages in this case either. I think this is like a lot of the mortgage cases that this court has seen. The Brackens borrowed money. They defaulted on their loan. They weren't able to pay that back. And if you look at the cause of the problems that the Brackens had and the fact that they're facing foreclosure, it's because they borrowed money and they can't pay it back. This case is not distinguishable factually from a number of the cases that this court has already decided, including Thompson, Singa, Watson, Thomas, where under facts that are not distinguishable from the facts of this case, this court held that none of those kinds of representations were actionable. And if the court does not have any more questions for me, I'll forfeit the rest of my time.
As a practical matter, is this case subject to resolution? You know, I come back to it and you responded well in terms of the dollars and cents resolution, or is it just bespeak of a legal resolution on these particular issues? Is this a settleable case?
I don't think at this point that it is. I don't have the exact figures in front of me. The original debt was about $150,000. I know that at points during the loan modification process, the Brackens were informed about how much in arrears they were. There's a February 2011 notice of default and acceleration letter. In that letter, the bank stated that the amount of arrears was about $33,000, which I think would make the debt at that time $180,000 or $190,000. Judge Jolly, you asked when the last payment was made. I think the record shows that there haven't been any payments made since 2010, sometime in 2010. They did make some trial payment plan payments in late 2009. There were a couple of payments of $500. There were three trial payment plan payments of in the $900 range in late 2009, early 2010. I don't think that there is any record evidence to show that there were payments after that time, certainly not after 2010.
He had said, I guess, at least I was left with the impression, they couldn't make any payments if they wanted to because of the status of the litigation. Is that accurate?
There is record evidence that the Brackens attempted to make some other payments. The bank refused to take those because those payments were not pursuant to a plan and didn't satisfy the debt, which is in accordance with the terms of the loan agreement.
Okay. All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Back to you, Mr. Peacock.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a few things to hit the high points. I think this probably goes without saying, but this court has held in a number of cases that there's always a duty to correct one's own prior false or misleading statement. It's not in any of the briefs, but it's the most recent site on that is the trustees of the Northwest Laundry Trust Fund, 27 F3rd 153, 1994 case. It was also cited by Heard versus BAC, a Northern District of Texas case at 880 F sub 2nd 747. And so they have that duty to correct their own false and misleading statements, but they didn't do it in this case. Counsel makes a argument about, well, regarding the home equity loan, we really didn't know. But in our briefs, we stated that in 2004, the Texas Attorney General wrote an opinion that said that home equity loans could be modified. They took the position that they weren't going to modify them, apparently. At least that's what they told our client. And certainly, the Texas Supreme Court did weigh in on it in 2014 and said they could be modified. But it was a misstatement, a misleading statement to our client, and certainly telling them that there's liens on the property when there's not is just egregious. So we ask that the matter be reversed and remanded to the district court, and let us go to trial on these damages that we've incurred. And by the way, the damages are in our pleadings. Page 26 of our second amended complaint has the mental anguish, acute psychic trauma, loss of creditworthiness, stigma of foreclosure, the value of the loss of time. All of those items are listed there. So if there's no further questions,
all right,
I'll sit down.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Peacock.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Luce, the case will be submitted. Before we call up the third case, the court will stand.